Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to Great Loop Radio, brought to you every Friday morning at 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time by America's Great Loop Cruisers Association. AGLCA and our Admiral sponsors, Dog River Marina and Boat Works, Dozier's Regatta Point Yachting Center, Dozier's Waterway Guide and Magazine, Green Turtle Bay Resort, Marina Life, Richardson's Map Tech, Passage Maker Trawler Fest, and Skipper Bob Publications invite you to join us as we explore the Great Loop every Friday morning with a show chock full of information that's useful to you whether you're dreaming of, in the midst of, or planning a trip around the Great Loop. And don't forget to visit our ship store at www.greatloop.org, ship store. Thanks and enjoy the show. Good morning. This is Beth McHugh, and I'm filling in today for Janice and Steve Cromer, who are off attending a very exciting board meeting. And I'm joined today by Janine Salica, our sponsor sales coordinator.
Good morning.
And good morning. And our guest today is Steve Eames, who is the South Coast Office Director for the South Carolina Coastal Conservation League. Good morning, Steve, and thanks for being with us.
Good morning, Beth. Thanks very much for inviting me.
Okay. Why don't you tell us a little bit, first of all, about what the Coastal Conservation League is and what they do?
That'd be great. The first thing I wanted to say is when you asked me to do this show and I looked at your association, it is astounding, amazing that I didn't even know that there was the loop connectivity, for want of a better word, that you could actually go either direction. I mean, the history that people must see on that trip is amazing. But, so I really commend the organization and also the members and the participants and the people who do it. It's a great dream. Coastal Conservation League. Well, we are an old organization as nonprofits go. You know, we've been around since 1989, where there were sort of two or three people and $500 in the bank, I think. And essentially grown to today, we have about 5,000 members or something, and a main office in Charleston, an office down in the South Coast in Beaufort, and up in Georgetown in South Carolina, and also a legislative office in Columbia. Essentially what we do, I suppose if I sum it up, it's land and communities, or nature and communities in balance, and a lot of our work is very much focused on the water quality and air quality, reduction of emissions, but also keeping our coastal waters particularly clean. And that is an obvious factor in the Charleston area and in the Low Country here in South Carolina in general, is that water is so much part of who we are and what we do. We tend to work like every organization. We have to divide it up into functional areas, for want of a better word. So we have a number of program areas, predominantly in energy and climate, where we're looking at things like clean energy and advocating against dirty choices and pollution. We work through land and communities, which is, I think, very much the heart of what we do, which is about land use. And we do sustainable agriculture, which is, in many cases, that program is about keeping the character of the Low Country. Air, water, and public health, as of course I mentioned. And finally, we have what we call a legislative program, because so much of what we do, we realize, needs a longer-term focus. And in many cases in South Carolina and Low Country, then that focus needs to be legislative in nature, where we get rules, laws, and regulations amended or changed.
Okay. Now, one of the big issues in the news around here lately, we're also in the Charleston area, has been the Savannah River dredging project, and there's been a lot of misinformation and a lot of information coming out about this. Can you tell us what the Coastal Conservation League's position is as far as the dredging goes?
Well, look, I probably should describe very quickly the project for the listeners, because people need to understand the complexity and the scale and scope of this, what I call a mechanical monster. It's a $650 million project to deepen the Savannah River, and it's a river, not a harbour, from the Seabee up to the Inner Harbour in Savannah. So it's about 36 to 38 miles, depending on where you start your measurement. That is to deepen it from its current 42 feet down to 47 feet. Now, bear in mind that that river started at 24 feet when Oglethorpe first arrived in Georgia back in the late 1700s. What we have is, at various points, they're going to deepen that. They're going to knock off in about five locations. They're going to cut away the edges of the river in order to allow ships to be able to pass at various points or to develop what's called turning basins. Currently, it's a one-way, one-lane, one-way river for large ship traffic. And the other sort of key element, two key elements, I should say, is they're going to drop what we call bubblers into the Savannah River to keep the oxygen going. And they're very just large, they're called space cans. They're very large versions of what you see in a normal fish tank that keeps the water oxygenated. And finally, for the endangered, some of the fish that spawn and breed up in the upper levels of the Savannah River, they are going to build what we call a fish bypass. Instead of knocking out a dam that's broken and not working anyway, they're going to spend $32 million or so to build a bypass around the dam so the fish, hopefully if they get through the churning and burning near the Savannah Harbour, will actually then use the bypass to get to their traditional spawning ground. We objected to the... In 1999, the Georgia Ports Authority and the Army Corps issued an EIA, Environmental Impact Statement, to deepen the harbour then, and we objected in 2000 legally. And the main reasons for our objection is, of course, that as you dredge, the salt water wedge moves further upriver, so we're going to deoxygenate and increase the salinity of the river, which will have a natural effect on fish and wildlife. Also, we objected to the fact that we didn't believe that the Corps had done their economic analysis properly to actually justify all the money and the potential environmental damage in the first place. That was 12, 13 years ago, and it's still going on today, and we are still objecting to those issues, both environmental but also economic, to this very day. And I believe that the final documentation will come out for public review. The Corps will issue that probably in April, 2 to 3 months' time, and we'll be keenly reviewing that and working out then what our actual key objections are.
Now, do you think if they do go ahead with this dredging that there could be, because obviously our members are concerned with the recreational cruising, do you think it would adversely affect their ability to use this waterway and enjoy it the way that they do now? Or
there's two questions there, Beth. I think the first instance is it won't affect functionally their ability to use and, you know, and to navigate the river, obviously with the exception that wherever the churning and burning work is going on, there'll be places to avoid. And yeah, there's going to be more larger ships, more ships in general, they believe, going up based on the Corps' economic analysis. So the first part of the question is probably a guarded no, it won't affect the actual ability of your members to move up and down the river. I think where it will affect is, well, they're knocking sides off the river, and it is a naturally beautiful river that has had, you know, 12,000 acres of wetlands associated with in the past, and that's, you know, that's reduced to something like just over 1,200 now. You know, it's not going to look pretty, for want of a better word. Obviously, you've got the fishing as a recreational activity, which will change as the salinity and the dissolved oxygen changes. And there are a number of particularly one or now two sturgeon endangered species that use the river or proximate to the river. And also, I think the main thing is it'll be a lot of more traffic, for want of a better word. So, yeah, there's a functional element to that, but I think there's an intangible element as well where I think your members would suffer.
Well, I think that, as you pointed out in the beginning, I mean, part of this trip is seeing
the history, and it's seeing the beauty that still does exist in some places, as you said, like on the Savannah River. That's part of why they do this trip. I mean, it's not just to say, you know, hey, I made the loop, and isn't that great, but seeing the beauty that still exists is a big part of it. And if that's going to be degraded by this project, I think that our members will definitely have concerns about it. And I don't know how many outside of our area are actually aware of it, and maybe this will help them become aware of it and put their two cents in about it.
Yeah, well, we're, you know, as an organization, we're not against dredging and deepening per se. We just want to ensure that the economic benefit is there and the mitigation is appropriate. And unfortunately, in the Savannah River case, it's one of those places where both those really haven't lined up. So I sort of have an expression that, well, this is weird because both the taxpayer and a river are going to be thrown under the bus, for want of a better word. But you're right in that respect. And it's a lot about, I looked on your website and I quickly had a look through a presentation someone had done on the loop, and it was amazing, some of the scenery that your members see on that trip. I mean, I didn't even know you could cut across Florida, for example,
yeah,
through the locks on the lake. I mean, that's phenomenal.
Yeah.
And we don't really want to see that opportunity taken away from you know, our children in the Low Country and our children's children in the Low Country.
Well, dredging, of course, isn't always a bad thing. I mean, there are parts of the intercoastal waterway that we're advocating be dredged at the moment because it's getting so shallow. It could get to the point where the Great Loop doesn't exist anymore, where people can't do it because it's become so silted over that you can't get through. So sometimes you do have to dredge, but like you said, you need to take a lot of things into account when you're talking about a project of that size.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and that's the size of it. We're working on another project, which is it's a recreational harbour down here in the South Coast. And, of course, we're absolutely not against the dredging. The only thing we want to make sure is they dispose of the soil appropriately, or the dredge spoil, I should say,
right,
appropriately, because, you know, this particular organisation has a history of just dumping it anywhere at sea, and they were caught doing it, they were fined doing it, and now they've asked, 10 years later, they've asked to do it again. So, you know, a lot of citizens and recreational boat users have asked us to, well, keep an eye on them, basically, but to their credit, they've engaged us early, knowing that, you know, we're not sort of an organisation to be messed with when it comes to water quality. And you know, I'm hoping in the future this particular project has a great result.
Okay, I think we're going to take a very brief break now for a commercial from one of our sponsors, and we'll be right back.
Donovan's Shady Harbor Marina is a proud commander sponsor of AGLCA, conveniently located just south of Albany on the Hudson River, with easy approach deep water slips. Stay a day, a week, or a month at this family and pet-friendly facility and enjoy a full-service marina complete with a convenience store, ship store, gift shop, bathhouse, laundry room, swimming pool, restaurant, and more. Enjoy free wireless and cable TV. Both gas and diesel fuel are available. For more information, visit www.shadyharbormarina.com.
Okay, and we've been talking a lot about kind of preserving the beauty of this area for everybody, but what exactly is the Conservation League doing to try to keep development or unbridled development down in this area, just so that there are still some natural areas for people to enjoy?
Well, development in itself is not bad. It's what we tend to object to is the sprawl development that encroaches on the headwaters of our creeks, rivers, and waterways. And one of the things we do, particularly down in the South Coast here, is promote what we call watershed-based planning, which is essentially where the headwaters of a river, let's say the May or the Okotee River down our way, are taken into consideration when counties and municipalities do their zoning and land planning, for want of a better word. The other area, of course, is sometimes people just want to build bridges and docks to the small marsh islands that inhabit this part of the country. And again, we're asking to make sure that, you know, some of the things we advocate for the regulations and behind the construction of those bridges and docks, for example, we make sure they're strict, they're environmentally, you know, sound and things like that. The other area we tend to get involved in is sometimes there is sort of unbridled annexation in order for development, and municipalities can try to annex certain pieces of land in order to gain access to the waterfront for development. So that's another area where we're in a watchdog, but also sometimes we actually will go to litigation in an attempt to stop that. But what we try to do all the time is take much more of a solution focus, where we're working with municipalities and counties, developing what's called smart codes for development, which is a way of ensuring that the natural burden of the water, the natural burden of the land, is taken into consideration when we do our zoning and our density, and anything. And we're also obviously encouraging, you know, a more environmentally and regional approach to port planning, both large port and small port planning.
Okay. Do you mention working with municipalities? Do you generally find that they're cooperative in these things, like they actually want to work with you and try to do the right thing as far as the development and not ruining the waterfront for everybody?
Absolutely, particularly nowadays. I mean, I think you go back, let's say, 10 years, it was, we tended to be just denying and fighting everything. But there has been a sea change in the last few years, and more so nowadays we find, as we work with counties and municipalities, particularly down here in the South Coast, that they're talking to us about solutions and agreeing with us on the way to, on the way to do things, for example, watershed-based planning or transferring density, housing density, for example, away from sensitive headwaters of rivers. They are much, much more solution-focused and much more environmentally conscious. And I think the South Coast demographics being sort of as they are, folks are generally much more aware of it and demanded of their sort of elected officials.
Okay, and I know you're a little short for time, but if we could just talk about one more issue, the cruise ships in Charleston Harbor.
Ah, yes.
Yeah. You want to give us a little talk about that as far as the league and what they'd like to see happen?
Certainly. Cruise ships is, well, it's a topic that's come up, obviously, in Charleston in particular. We filed against Carnival Lines back in, it was June last year. And for the most part, we're simply asking that the cruise industry, like all other, let's say, tourist-related industries in Charleston, come under the purview of the city, of city ordinance and city regulations. The problem we have with the cruise ships per se is, and how it affects South Carolina, is that they are often, they sit alongside and burn fuel for maybe 8 hours as they're there the whole day. So that's dirty bunker fuel emissions going into Charleston Harbor's, you know, airspace, for want of a better word. They can discharge sewage and garbage into the water when they are 3 miles out, for example. And, of course, this type of pollution will affect the water quality and fishing and things like that. What we want is, what we believe Charleston really deserves is a sort of an annual cap. People have verbally indicated, the Ports Authority has verbally said 104 ships per year. And, of course, we would like them just to put that in writing, you know, in some form of agreement. Limiting the passengers, for example. We also want shoreside power so that the ships can turn off when they're alongside. And we also essentially want to be able to make sure there's some way that the cruise industry makes a contribution back to Charleston in the form of maybe some fees or, you know, to pay for the infrastructure that's going into preparing for and improving the experience. We're not against cruise ships. We don't want to ban cruise ships. We just would like to see it regulated like any other tourist industry in the city. And there are other locations around the country that have done that.
Okay. Well, I guess that's about all we're going to get into for today, since you do have limited time. But if you could give us the website address for the Coastal Conservation League, just for those who want to follow up on this and keep track of the issues.
Absolutely. Thanks, Beth. Well, South Carolina Coastal Conservation League, it's coastalconservationleague.org, and Coastal Conservation League is all one word. And there's plenty of information there about what we do. And, of course, should your members want to become our members, we would love it.
Okay.
Thanks,
well, thanks again for doing this. And
okay.
We'll see you all next week.
Bye-bye.
Thanks, Steve. Bye.